And welcome to another episode of Talking Aerospace Today from Siemens Digital Industries Software. I'm Patty Russo, and I'm responsible for global marketing for the aerospace and defense vertical here at Siemens. Thank you so much for joining our conversation. Over the course of this podcast, we've explored many facets of digital transformation maturity. We've discussed why it's needed in the aerospace and defense industry. We've delved into the stages of automation and generative design, and we've introduced the role that AI and ML will play in digital transformation. Today, we're reaching the end of this part of our journey where we'll explore digital transformation maturity's final stage, closed loop optimization. Once again, we're joined by Todd Tuttle, Vice President of A&D at Siemens Digital Industries Software. Again, welcome, Todd.
Yeah, thank you, Patty. And thank you to all our listeners who've made the journey with us. I think we started maybe back in July or August of last year with this journey, thinking it'd be maybe 5 or 6 podcasts, and it's turned into about 15 or 16, I think. So thank you for taking the journey with us. And if you're just finding the podcast now and trying to learn more about digital transformation, I'd encourage you to go back and listen to some of those earlier episodes to set some context to where we're at.
Awesome. We also today have a guest for this segment, and I'm happy to introduce Thierry Albrechts, Director of Aerospace Industry Solutions for the Simulation and Testing Portfolio within Siemens Xcelerator. Welcome, Thierry.
Thanks for having me, and always happy to talk about our passion related to the space industry.
Outstanding. Yeah, I'm looking forward to a dynamic conversation today. Okay, so Todd, let's start this conversation today with a quick rundown of what we talked about previously as it relates to digital transformation maturity and how that's led to where we are today.
Digital transformation maturity, as we talk about it, is a 5-step method for companies to understand where they're at and where they need to go. And the first step is configuration. The second step is connection. The third step is automation. The fourth step is generative design. And the fifth step is closed loop optimization. And there are a series of podcasts that really focus on the first four. Today, we're going to focus on closed loop optimization. And you think about the last few podcasts, we talked about generative design with Tony Nicoli in electrical, and generative design with John O'Connor in mechanical, and those really build up to what we're going to talk about today.
So can you define closed loop optimization in the context of digital transformation maturity, Todd?
Absolutely. Let's start with the problem we're trying to solve. Problem we're trying to solve is really time. And we talk about workforce and time a lot in the context of digital transformation maturity, but time is really key to why closed loop optimization can help companies so much. Let's look at an example, let's say. Let's say I'm trying to design this blended wing aircraft, kind of new aircraft design that several companies are talking about, and I'm considering various trades. Do I want a fossil fuel-based propulsion system, or would I rather look at hydrogen? And companies are looking at maybe it's a transport aircraft, maybe it's an aircraft to carry passengers. And just think about the different kinds of trades and the different kinds of effects that one decision, what's my fuel? How's my propulsion going to work? Think about how that affects the entire aircraft, how it affects the structures, how it affects the control system and the power, how it affects how fuel is stored, how it affects what the range of the aircraft can be. And you think about that in the context of how an engineering company is organized and how an engineering company works. Because at the end of the day, you know, we engineers, we like to say we're very much involved in science, but I like to say the difference between an engineer and a scientist is a scientist is working on theories and coming up with great ideas. Engineers have to ship products that make money. So eventually, if you're designing this blended wing aircraft, there's a date out there in the future where you've got to have a critical design review, finish your design, start building it, and produce things that make money. And the realities of those timeframes in engineering mean that there's a finite number of design iterations that you can do. And in the past, you know, when I've worked on several large aircraft programs, that number of design iterations is pretty limited. There's some early trade studies we do, but once we start really looking at things like, how do I lay out the wing? How do I lay out the wiring? What avionics do I need to use? What's my certification program going to look like? There's just a few, maybe five, maybe six, seven iterations that can happen. And what I've seen that lead to in a lot of the companies I've worked with, a lot of the programs I've worked on, is what I call sub-optimization. And that happens when a mechanical team is looking at the structure of the aircraft. Maybe a flight control team is looking at the way the flight controls work. The electrical team is designing the electronics. Maybe the layout of the aircraft, and the fuel team is designing the fuel system. They all work in parallel. They all have individual goals and sets of requirements they've been given to meet. And as one team comes up with a good idea, maybe the aerodynamicists decide to change the outer mold line of the aircraft a bit, that has a big effect on those teams. And the mechanical team tends to optimize for their particular mechanical design, not necessarily for the design of the whole aircraft, because there's just not enough time to pass all those designs, all those decisions, and all that engineering among all the teams to say, well, if I design the flight controls this way, then maybe I can really reduce the weight of the structure. And there's only so many times we can play that back and forth that it becomes sub-optimized. What closed-loop optimization lets you do is it automates a lot of those connections and a lot of those decisions, because as we say, if I can design a system once generatively inside a computer, and then I can feed that into a simulation and really evaluate that in the digital twin, I can pull that back in, pull the output of that simulation and learn from that and say, let's initiate another automated design. And maybe what I can do in designing my aircraft, maybe rather than designing the aircraft 5, 6, 7, 10 times, maybe I can design that aircraft 5, 6, 7, 10,000 times. If I've automated a lot of those things, that's the real promise of closed loop optimization. But I've talked about an aircraft example. So good to have Thierry on the broadcast with us, because Thierry is really one of the people that I'm proud to know and work with here at Siemens, who really has a strong interest in a very strong background in space. Thierry, I'm wondering if you have some examples of what's happened in the past and how this can be used with respect to space.
Well, thank you, Todd. And yes, well, I'm always interested in how engineering of space systems happened in the past and how certain problems could have been solved by using digitalization capabilities that we have today, and learn actually from what happened in the past. And one of my favorite projects, as you know, Todd, is the Apollo project. I was actually born in the middle of the Apollo project, and what always amazes me is how fast that project was actually put in place and how fast that project actually reached the very simple goal that JF Kennedy actually defined at the beginning of the 60s, actually 62, where he said, well, let's go to the moon and bring back the astronauts in a safe way before the end of the decade. It was a great challenge. And when looking at the program, the program kicked off in 62, and actually in 68, the Apollo 8 program actually made the first travel to the moon, made some orbits around the moon, came back, and of course in 69, July 69, Apollo 11 landed on the moon. So when you compare that to that kind of development, where you have that development happening in 6 to 7 years, being successful in 6 to 7 years, it always amazes me why, for instance, new aircraft programs typically take 10 to 11 years to complete and to enter into service. Well, in a certain way, you could say, well, is digitalization slowing us down? I often put that that question in front of our colleagues or customers when having discussions, but there's something that we really forget about how that development happened. Actually, it required in the 60s around 400,000 people to develop the Apollo project. It required something like $25 billion at that moment, and that's comparable to $200 billion today. 4.6% of the US budget was going in the mid of the 60s to the Apollo project. And of course, that's not comparable to the typical 30,000 people you need to develop a wide body aircraft, or when you compare it to SpaceX, where they are developing very similar capabilities, launch capabilities, manned spacecraft capabilities, rocket engines, all by their own. It requires today something like 10,000 to 15,000 people to develop these kind of systems. So something happened, Todd, here. And I believe that digitalization is really one of the elements that really has reduced the amount of people you need 50 years ago to develop a launch system, to develop a spacecraft. Let's say that the amount of people and the amount and the costs needed to develop that basically went one order of magnitude down.
So Thierry, I think you anticipated my next question, so I'm going to ask a different question. What you just talked about was the essentially reduction in workforce, a way that closed loop optimization and digital transformation can help address that need when you look at if it took 400,000 people to develop the Apollo program and we're looking at 10 to 15,000 people today to develop an aircraft program. Can you talk a little bit about what that looks like in terms of what they're able to do? So what power do those now 10 to 15,000 people have as a result of this technology and the advances in technology and closed loop optimization that they didn't have before, and where maybe the most impact can be relative to using engineers to do that really critical engineering work?
You know, the calculation capabilities that we have today, the computational power that we have today, and the different modeling capabilities, whether it's electrical system modeling, whether it's mechanical design, electrical design modeling, whether it's, let's say, physical simulation capabilities that we have today, all of them allow to basically make models and to do everything that happened in the past in a manual way, to do that in a digital way. And as Todd explained, when you are able to connect all these models and keep the configuration, that takes a lot of the overhead away of the program that is being developed. Secondly, when you can use all these different connected models together, you can start to implement automated processes, automated workflows that allow to do more optimization in a shorter time and create a much more detailed insight in how your system, how your components will behave. And I believe there's another possibility today that we often forget about. So when you look at the spacecraft, it's an integration of several systems. In the past, let's say all these different systems were developed in silos. Today, these digital models can basically be created in a connected way. You tear down the barriers between the different departments and disciplines that are involved in this development. And by doing so, you can create much more elegant engineering workflows.
Thierry, if I could, because I want to use your experience in the Apollo program. Let's see if I can make a fool out of myself, because you know way better than me. But I remember there was this problem with, I think, the second stage of the Saturn V, where there was an instability inside the engine they called POGO. And I think we lost a couple of Saturn V's that were launched, fortunately unmanned, and that really threatened the Apollo program. And I wonder if you could kind of give our listeners an idea of how that really, really complex physics problem was solved then, and maybe how that could be, well, what we learned from that, and how a problem like that could be solved today with some of the modern simulation techniques that you work with.
Well, yes, indeed, Todd. Very early in the program and during one of the first flight tests, one of the Saturn rockets actually experienced very heavy vibrations, which were actually caused by the fluid dynamic interactions between, let's say, the fuel tanks on one side, which are connected to the engines through the fuel pipes, and actually a POGO phenomenon happened that caused the vibrations. Well, today, actually, simulation capabilities are available to actually identify that very early in the program and avoid that kind of problem and avoid delays in the program and reduce the risk. So the capabilities today, they are not only capable to model the different components in an isolated way. The models of today, they can also be used to create a more integrated model of the spacecraft and give you engineering insight of how that spacecraft will behave during real operations.
As you've just heard from Todd and Thierry, closed-loop optimization obviously offers many benefits. But we are up against our time for today, and we need to wrap up the discussion. But never fear, we'll pick this up again next time. Thank you to Todd and Thierry, and thank you to our listeners for joining today's conversation. I'm your host, Patty Russo. We invite you to join us for the next episode of Talking Aerospace Today.